We'll replace you with Robbie.
Ooh. Ooh. We're in Luke 14, and it's a fairly long text, so we'll just kind of jump right in here. The setting is Jesus eating, which he does several times, in the house of a Pharisee, and gives an opportunity for what, if we get to some theologizing, I think is some unbelievably stern law and a complete reversal of a part of the very core way of thinking in that culture and time, and also specifically of the Pharisees. We'll come back to some of that. Luke begins with a construction that he uses quite a bit. There's an excellent discussion of this in James W. Velt's Fundamental Greek Grammar, second edition. What page would that be, Jim? Yeah. No, this chi agenita, and then followed by the articular infinitive with n. It's sort of reflecting vayahi b. Yeah, right. So literally, and it happened while. And I don't even know if you need to translate the agenita, but just sort of translate when. And then you have and it happened. Good. The auton is the logical subject, the accusative case subject of elthein. So you translate, and it happened when he, Jesus, came into the house, eis oikon, tinas ton archonton ton pharisaion, the house of a certain one of the rulers of the Pharisees. Here's a temporal note, sabbato, on a Sabbath, dative of time when. Now, phagein probably expresses purpose. He came there to eat, right? Bread and other food, I assume, also. And they themselves, autoi, a little bit of an emphasis there the Pharisees themselves, now a periphrastic construction. Eizon parate ruminoi auton. They were closely watching him. We have a couple of these periphrastic constructions, and you remember what that is, simply like in English with a helping verb, they were watching. And the ing word is the participle. And Greek does it the same way. Here, eizon is the imperfect of eimi, third person plural. And parate ruminoi is the present middle passive participle of parate reo. According to the lexicon, there's no particular middle sense to it here. It simply has the same meaning as the active, to watch closely, guard, or observe. So they've got an eye on Jesus. They want to see what he's going to do for a number of reasons. And then, so that sort of sets the stage, for what Jesus is about to do and say. Verses 2 to 5, 2 to 6, we'll skip over just because we're commanded so to do by the people that chose the reading. That always sort of drives me nuts why they do that. But they did it, so we'll move to verse 7. Elegant, and he perhaps give it an inceptive force here, this imperfect indicative active. He began to say to those who had been called, tous keklemenus, I suppose that would be the perfect participle passive of kaleo, and you throw a definite article on the front of it and turn it into a noun, the having been called, the ones who had been called or invited, a parable. Epechon has as its referent, this participle has, the referent is Jesus, who is also the unexpressed subject of the main verb elegon, the very first word in the sentence. And here a causal sense works really well if you try to translate this participle a little more specifically. Epecho is a member of my favorite subset of Greek verbs, the echo compounds, and I love them so much because I can never remember what they mean. I always have to look them up. So I did. Epecho means to hold fast, aim one's attention at, stop, or stay. And here, Jesus seems to be aiming his attention at them, and he's echoing how the first seats, tas protoklesias, they were choosing, ex eleganta. So let's give epekon a causal sense. He began to say a parable to those who had been called because he noted how they typically chose the first seats. Legon prosatos, saying to them, sort of a, we've already had elegon, so this is sort of an unnecessarily full participle, sort of like he answered saying. And now Jesus begins to speak. Hutan, verse 8. Hutta, when, plus on, makes this into a kind of a, almost a conditional sentence. Whenever, kleithes, the aorist subjunctive, passive, singular, from kaleo, whenever you are called, hypotenos, by a certain one, into wedding feasts. Gamas is singular, gamus is the accusative plural, but there doesn't seem to be any real difference in meaning between singular and plural here. Whenever you are called by someone, by a certain one, into a wedding feast, me katakleithes, don't recline into the first seat, the protoklesia, mepita, lest, entimateras, and entimas is an adjective, it means honored. And here we have the comparative form of the adjective. And it's acting as a noun. A more honored one of you. And this use of the genitive is genitive of comparison. We had min of comparison earlier in Proverbs. Right. So don't recline into the first seat, lest a more honored of you may have been called. Here's another periphrastic construction. A is the subjunctive of eimi plus keklemenos, the perfect passive participle of kaleo. Just, again, it's a fairly easy translational move into English. Lest someone more honored than you may have been called by him, hip autu. Let's see, it's a long sentence, so we'll stop and go back. Remember that prohibitions in Greek, me plus the aorist subjunctive, right? And that's what we have here, me katakleithes, aorist passive, subjunctive of katakleino. Oh, mepita is expressing negative purpose, as it often does. Don't recline into the first seat, lest, or in order that not, this may happen. And here's where we begin to really echo Proverbs chapter 25, the old don't exalt yourself because you'll get embarrassed. But Jesus is doing something more explicitly theological with it here, as we'll see when we get to verse 11. So anyway, starting over again, beginning of verse 8, when you are invited or called by a certain one to a feast, a wedding feast, do not recline in the first seat, lest someone more honored than you may have been called by him, and elthon ha se kai auton kalesas. And we'll take this participle as sort of expressing attendant circumstances or maybe time. And when he has come, the one you and him calling, the one who invited both you and he, no, you and him, eresoi, he will say to you, dus tuta tapan, give to this one a place. Now, ere is a little unusual there. What we've got going here since the beginning of verse 8 is a clause, a conditional relative clause that needs the subjunctive normally. Ere, however, is, anybody recognize that form? Future indicative from Lego, actually, I think. Is that right? The basket of books is over there. He's not saying anything. Yes, it's from Lego. Okay. Subjunctive, however, expressing futurity. So sometimes in the Greek New Testament, you can have a clause that would normally take a subjunctive, and it, you can substitute a future indicative. And that is what seems to be what Luke is doing here. And after he comes, the one who called both you and him will say to you, thus. Here's the aorist imperative of didomi, give to this one a place. So Tuta would be the indirect object of das, and tapan would be the accusative direct object. And then, now here we have a judgment call, arkse. If I'm not mistaken, this could be either the future middle indicative, of arko, or the aorist middle subjunctive of arko. I think the form would be the same, but the sense would be the same. Because if it's subjunctive, it simply fits into this clause that's headed by hatan, right? And if it's future, it's doing what ere did several words before, simply giving futurity through the use of the future indicative rather than the use of the subjunctive. So however you take it, I think the translation is basically the same. And then he will begin. Thank you for taking that machine away. It always makes me nervous. And then you will begin with shame, the last place to hold fast to or to possess, kat echo. All right, on the one hand, don't do that. Me katakleithes, don't do that. But on the other hand, now we have a contrasting hatan clause. Whenever you are called, or you have been called, go and recline. Poreithes is the aorist passive deponent participle from poroiomai, going, and probably translate here just as sort of attendant circumstances. Go and anapeze, aorist imperative, active, second person singular, recline, anapipto, fall down on, right? Recline into the last place for this purpose, so that, now let's modify the purpose clause with another hatan clause, whenever the one who has invited you, ha keklekos, perfect participle there of kale, we've got a lot of kaleoing going on here in this text, so that whenever the one who had invited you comes, he will say to you, now the ere, strictly speaking, is governed by the hina, right? We've got a clause within a clause here. The hatan clause takes elthe, and the hina clause takes ere. Again, in English, it sort of works out pretty directly. Whenever the one who invited you comes, so that he will say to you, phila, friend, let's see, come up, pros anabethi. Here's this funky imperative form of bino, right? It looks like a passive, but it's not. It's just simply the aorist imperative of bino. And pros anabino means come up, if I'm not mistaken. Go up or move up. Move up higher, an oteron. Then there will be to you glory before all those who are reclining at table with you. Soy here is, here's another sort of, I think it's Greek, but it's also something that Hebrew does. There will be to you, dative of possession. You will have glory. And I wonder here actually if doxa might carry some of its sort of more ordinary sense in terms of secular Greek, that is reputation or repute, rather than a theological sense of glory. Anyway, you will have doxa before all the ones who have been invited with you. Because, now, this is really the punchline, and I want to pause here theologically just a little bit, because pas ha hipson heoton, everyone who exalts himself, tapeno thesitai, will be humbled, and the one who humbles himself will be exalted. At this point, I think we'd have to say that Jesus has just kicked in eschatologically. He's talking about what God will do fundamentally and most finally on the last day to everyone who exalts himself, everyone who tries to create his own status vis-a-vis those around him. Anybody who tries to do that, God will humble. These are examples of the so-called divine passive. Who's going to be doing the humbling and the exalting? God is the one who's going to be doing it. And to the contrary, the one who humbles himself, God will exalt. Now, again, we'd have to argue that Jesus isn't sort of postulating shrewd behavior over against God. That is, if I really take the lowest seat, I'll do it, you know, so that God will sort of, I'll sort of fool God and do this. But what Jesus is doing, and I think this is a point of amazing law and amazing gospel, that is, in a culture in which social status is of supreme importance, and if there's anything the Pharisees cared about, they cared about purity, and they cared about cleanliness, and they cared about holiness, and especially in what setting? Tell me. Food, right? You have to eat with hands washed. You have to observe the dietary regulations, you know, to the nth degree. And meals for them were places where the status quo was to be recognized and reinforced. Meals are not places where you make changes. Everybody has a place in a meal. Everybody belongs a certain place, and everybody that's invited knows it, right? Jesus here completely overturns that way of relating to other people and, by implication, that way of relating to God. I think what he's sort of saying is, your whole system has come to be something that needs to be overturned. Do not relate to one another in terms of your relative status, but simply relate to one another according to the judgment and opinion of God. You put yourself in a low place, and you worry about letting God lift you up. And again, in that place and time, that is a remarkable statement of law to the Pharisees. And when we remember the kinds of people who sometimes stumbled into the meals at which Jesus was a guest, like the woman from Luke 7, who somehow, I always wondered how they let her in the door. You know, she made her way to the feet of Jesus and wept and anointed them and wiped his feet with her hair, which was an action of shocking intimacy. I mean, it would be even today. You know, if one of your wives has long hair and I'm kind of hanging out in the classroom and she wipes my feet with her hair, I mean, this is a little strange, see? But in that day and time, that woman had no place. She was not allowed, see? Jesus welcomes her and chastises the Simon the Pharisee who didn't give him, you know, water to wash or anoint his head or welcome him with a kiss. I mean, in Luke's gospel, it's at the meals where Jesus' actions, I would want to argue, are both the most strident law to those who want to maintain the status quo and maintain this way of relating to one another, and they're the most precious gospel. Jesus, in a sense, doesn't always say it specifically, but read in social, cultural context, he shows it. I mean, he shows an unbelievable willingness to accept those people whom everyone else would regard as unacceptable. And so that's sort of what he's promoting here, is an overturning of the whole way they look at things. Do not take your proper place. Do not think that your proper place is higher than somebody else's proper place. Right? Instead, be content. Go to the lowest seat, and then let the one who called you, and by the way, we have a couple verses to go, but then right after this text, we have the parable of the great feast. And who is the one who does the calling? God, right? Let the one who called you lift you up. See? Leave it to God. And then we have the Lucan prologue. We have the infancy narratives. You know, he has torn down, taken down those who are mighty, and he has lifted up those of low degree. I mean, this is a powerful theme in Luke's gospel. But we got 1 minute to go. So Jesus has, in a sense, you know, it's a bunch of Pharisees here, by and large. He has a very stern word to say to them, and then a gospel invitation. The one who humbles himself will be lifted up. God will lift him up through me, Jesus would say. Verse 12, and he began also to say to the one who had invited him, now he speaks to the host, whenever you make lunch or dinner, do not call your friends, nor your brothers, nor your relatives, nor your rich neighbors, lest also these call you in return, invite you in return, and there will become to you a repayment. Another dative of possession there. You will have repayment. Hey, Andy, what is dialectical negation? Okay. Would you say something about that quick? Well, Jesus isn't saying never have your mother-in-law over for dinner, although with some of your mother-in-laws, that probably would be a good idea. I heard a guy come into a coffee shop one time in the wintertime, and he said, he's a truck driver, he said, "Oh, it's colder out there than a mother-in-law's kiss." I said, I wanted to say, tell me more. Again, don't do this in view of how other people will treat you, right? Don't act with an eye towards others and towards what they will owe you in terms of social standing and status. I mean, probably Asian cultures today still preserve this sort of intense interest in relative social standing. The closest I've come to here at the campus of Concordia Cemetery is who gets to stand where in line when the faculty marches in. Now, this is a cause for great sin. That's right. And I would like to point out that I'm no longer last in line. No, that's just kidding. That's right. That's right. Although no doubt I deserve to be. But whenever you make a banquet, call the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, all these adjectives which are simply acting as nouns. And remember, these are not just sort of needy people, but they're also unclean people. They're ritually unclean, right? They can't go into the temple and offer sacrifice. These are really the marginal, the outcast, the unacceptable, okay? Act independently of what they can do, right? And you will be makarios. You will be a blessed person because they do not have to repay to you. This is you see this in the New Testament. You see echo plus an infinitive. And it sort of means have the ability to do something. Here, they can't repay you. For you will be repaid in the resurrection of the righteous. See, once again, it's act with an eye toward God, right? Ignore these social distinctions and ignore the things. And this was a big issue in the first century. Read James chapter 1 and chapter 2 about the rich man and the poor man in the assembly, right? See? So, to those who want to hold on to these things, a severe word of law. But to those who know that they are needy and lowly, wonderful words of gospel. And we're out of time. The natives are restless. It's time to go.
You already talked about it.
Yes.
The response to the first, okay, I'll manipulate the system by
right.
going to the...
Good. That's good. I never...
It,
yeah.
It's like he knew that was coming.
Yeah, yeah. So to the host...
Yeah.
Don't you invite those kind of people, yeah. Hey, Jim.
Hi.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. I'm preaching on this text.
Well, may God have mercy.
Yeah, thank you. Did you translate the word in the group zone in verse 11 as exalt?
I meant to say exalt.
Okay.
Lift high.
Okay.
Make high.
Because that would really be interesting if the act was that they would absolve themselves.
That would be the hifil of room.
Right.
Yeah, okay. No, exalt.
I didn't want to make that big thrust of yeah. myself before I checked that out.
No, I don't think it can mean absolve. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That means the lack of humility in the